now. So we'll see you in a couple minutes, actually.
Yeah, we gotta go change our outfits.
Are we changing our outfits?
We're
not changing our
outfits. My sister asked me that. I was like, why would I do that?
What's with the neighbors? 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 Sorry, guys. I had to improvise. I lost the intro. Don't judge me. Keep on listening.
I'm
such a good friend.
I had a random thought earlier today while I was driving. And do trees ever stop growing? Do they just keep getting taller and taller? What about the trees that are too, aren't being maintained? Do they just keep growing like the ones in the forest?
I think they grow to a maturity.
Maturity.
And they stay that big, but I mean, they get new leaves every season. And
sure.
I mean, if a branch falls off, a new branch will grow.
Like a lizard.
But I think that's the extent. I don't think that happens. I don't think new branches grow in other branches places, but I think that's the extent to it. I think once they get up to full growth, I think they're just done. Some trees just grow bigger than others. Like an oak tree. Oak trees can grow so big, or like your redwoods. Those are humongous. That's an interesting question. I never thought about that before. Is that your question of the day?
No.
No, just wondering.
So, everyone, I am so sorry that we haven't been on the last couple weeks. We had trial for Alice's abuser, and she won. Is that the right terms? He was found guilty. So that's wonderful and amazing news, and thank you for everyone that was supporting us during that time. But it was just too much to try to handle the trial and recording at the same time. I don't know. So, yeah. So, he was found guilty, and we're back in California, and everything is great, and we're happy, and he's in jail. And every morning that I wake up, I say, I slept great. Wonder how Beep felt. I said, I don't know if I should say his name or not. So, I wonder how Beep slept last night, and then I'm like, hopefully it was horrible.
Hopefully it was horrible. You know, I think saying that you guys won is highly appropriate, because this is something that you guys have been facing for 6 years. Six years?
Almost and seven.
It's ridiculous for how long. And it makes me think, thinking about, all these, sex offenders that get put on blast years and years later, or accused of something years and years later, and you're like, oh, they're just now accusing them. It makes me wonder, is it the court, and is it them delaying it, and it just comes out in the news and it looks like it's years and years later, but really they've been dealing with this for their entire life.
That could be.
Because, I mean, I like hearing about how long this took for you guys, and I'm definitely one to think that, and who I have thought that way in the past, and now I think a lot differently.
Yeah, me too.
But I mean, it's just when you see something like that in the headlines, maybe it's not something. Maybe there's just been delay because how did they delay it several times?
Yeah. So one of the times was because he pled guilty. He took harp. Can you not? he's messing with the wire. Leon, don't mess with the wire.
Oh, he's like, what, you have 3 episodes to record? Cool.
So one of the times he took our plea deal, and so he played, and this was during COVID. Yeah, I think we were going to go to trial, and then blah, 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 and it kept pushing it back. Oh, we're not ready. Oh, we're not ready. And then he did take our plea deal. He pled guilty, and then he was going to be, we had another hearing for his, so you plead guilty and then there's a change of plea or something like that, and so then they're like, okay, you need to come back up to Alaska and report and go to jail. And we had that one, but then, or we were gonna have that one, and then he was like, whoa, 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 wait, just kidding, I'm not I'm not pleading guilty. And so we had that, and then he had a change of attorney, and that took time. And so his that attorney kept pushing it because he's like, I'm not ready, and a couple of motions, and then we did have the trial, but then it was dismissed, or it was mistried because we ran out of jurors because everyone kept crying sick. And so it was mistried. And so then we were supposed to go again, but they kept his team kept pushing it, asking for different motions and that sort of stuff, which prolonged the entire thing until we finally went to trial.
Right.
It's so much more happened. And that's, you're probably right, Bree, because a lot of things happen behind scenes that you don't see
all
about.
That. Why would the news want to report all that? Like, that's not the fun stuff. That's not the interesting stuff. Yeah. Not that
that's
fun,
very boring.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not what the people want to read about. So, like, when you see something like that, think about, like, maybe the time that was put into it and, like, all the little sways that have been done to move it or everything around.
Right, exactly.
There's so many things in motion.
There is.
Well, I'm glad that is over for you. I'm glad
thank you
for all of you. I'm so happy, so proud of all of you guys. Proud of Alice.
Thank you. So
you guys
proud
are awesome.
Of her. There's a song that I've been playing a lot lately, and I was like, Alice, this is your song, girl. And she's just like, oh my God, Mom, you're so embarrassing. But it's called Good Girl Gone. And it's like, so, I'm like, oh, this is so good. I'll send it to you because I'm like, this is such a good song. And she's like, okay. Like, I literally don't care. So, okay. So I have a question for you.
All right.
It's been a million years since we talked. So how are you? And how is your family? What have you guys been up to?
That's a very valid question. I'm good. Everything's good. We're good. We've been busy trying to get everything in order. We have some family coming to visit. Not a whole lot's been going on. I kind of have a boring life. Charlotte's doing amazing in gymnastics. Oh my God. Her coach is so, like, her I love the way their coaches are. First off, sorry, let me back up. Let me get a shout out to Edgewater Gymnastics here in Panama City in like the Lynn Haven area. They are amazing. The coaches there are amazing. And they always like pull me aside to like give me like feedback about her. And I don't even have to ask. But she's been telling me the past couple weeks, like, oh my God, I thought I'd have to help Charlotte with this. But no, she did it all by herself. She's so strong. She's such a strong little girl.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. I was like, you know, I thought she'd be behind in this class. And because it is a little bit above her. And she's like, no, she's like, you can tell she wants it. And she's just doing so good with it. So
good job, Charlotte.
And she's been reading.
So proud
she's
of
got
her.
Like, she's out there reading for fun. It's like, who does that?
Lamb. She also eats a, she, but Brie, really,
it is my
she
child.
Eats vegetables. she prefers vegetables over candy.
Very true. And Natalie is Natalie. I posted on Facebook.
Them.
I don't know if you saw on Facebook the other day my post about what they said, but during school, Natalie randomly was like, "Mom, you can't eat babies or baby dolls." Or flat or American flags. And I was like, nope, you cannot. That is fact right there. Thank you very much for that. I don't know why you said that. It's kind of creepy. So whatever. We went to the beach yesterday for the fun.
I saw.
Yeah. Just a quick little fun getaway.
Yeah.
But yeah. Nothing too crazy has been going on with us.
Oh, I miss you guys so much.
Miss you too. Lego night.
Yes. We'll do a Lego night. Okay. Who's going first this week?
You want to go first? I can do my neighborhood story.
Sure.
I was Googling them. I realized, oh crap, I forgot to give my neighborhood story.
You're like, I am done. I did everything. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, I thought I was ahead of the game. Okay. I don't think I've done this one. Okay. This is a note to another neighbor.
Okay.
Every breath you take, Every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take. It's really audible through the floor. Hugs and kisses. That's all.
Oh.
So.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, every move you make is audible through the floor.
It's really audible through the floor. You're allowed. You're a D-I-N-O-S-A-U-R dinosaur.
Okay. So are you ready for my story?
Yes. You got me all excited.
So excited for all of my stories this week or coming up.
We're triple recording, guys. So bear with us in the next couple episodes.
That's why we are also like sparing our commentary.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you about Robert Maudsley. He was born on June 26, 1953. He grew up in the town of Toxeth, just outside of Liverpool, British Columbia. So over the seas, right?
Over the across the pond.
Across the pond. he was born to his dad, George, and his mother, Jean. And he had two brothers, Paul and Kevin, and his sister's name was Brenda. At the age of 6 months old, Robert and his three other siblings were removed from their parents' home due to neglect and abuse. The neighbors were actually the ones that reported the crimes. They were taken to a Catholic orphanage in Liverpool. There was actually a few different stories about this orphanage. I couldn't track down to see which one was actually true. But some reports said that the four of them were thriving there. They had regular meals. They had clean clothes on their backs. And the kids finally felt like they had a family. But there was other reports that stated that the nuns were constantly beating the children for misbehaving and even stated that the nuns would actually sometimes sexually abuse the children. So
the beatings sound about right for nuns.
Yeah.
I don't know about so sexual abuse. Whoa.
Yeah. So there's two different types of reports. And I was like, I don't know which one to believe. So just take it as you will. It doesn't really affect the story at all. Okay. When Robert was 9 years old, one of the children was going to be adopted. So, which, amazing, that's wonderful. Part of the process of being adopted in Liverpool was the biological parents needed to be notified about the adoption. And when Robert and his siblings' parents found out about this adoption that was going to happen, they're like, no, we want our children back. So they just let them have their kids back, I guess.
What?
They were like, we want these kids back. And so you could just, I guess, give the kids back. I don't know. So the four of the kids moved back in with their biological parents. The kids didn't recognize either of the parents because Robert was 6 months old when his parents, when he was removed from the home, and his others were not much older. So they're like, oh, you're our parents. Okay. So the parents were like, surprise, we're your parents. Also, you have 8 additional siblings.
What?
Because they just kept having babies after their 4 first children were removed.
Freaking bunnies.
So, this was a huge adjustment period for all of the kids, but one thing was the same, the abuse. That did not... I wouldn't mind, but I don't know if he's going to mess with the mic or not.
He's like, the star of the show is here.
Goodness, Leon. So this was a huge adjustment period, but the same thing remained the same was the abuse. Robert's dad would beat all of the children for the smallest thing, like if they didn't do a simple chore or if they were home late from school. He would just use his hands, his fists. He would also use household objects like canes, belts, sticks, spoons. The family was clearly poor. The parents had a lot of mouths to feed. So George, their dad, would force the children to go out and to steal food or household supplies. And the children would beat them. Or the children were beat if they didn't do it or if they got caught.
Oh.
So this is obviously just awful. but Jean wasn't, their mom wasn't any better. She never actually harmed the children, but she would never stop George from hurting the kids.
That's just as bad.
In fact, she sometimes would even encourage it. Like, if they didn't do something, she would go and tell George and he would beat the children.
Oh, my gosh.
So all of these children were being harmed, right? But George took the brunt of it. He would try to stand up to his dad or take the blame for the things that his siblings would, you know, get hit for. And his dad would hurt him harder. Like, he would hit him harder than the other children. There was one occasion where Robert was punished for something that he did or didn't do, and his dad locked him in his room for 6 months.
What?
Only George would go in there, and when he did, he would beat Robert, and he would go in like 4 to 6 times a day just to beat him. Robert didn't see or talk to anyone besides his father for 6 months. There was one time when George entered the room with a .22 caliber air rifle and beat George with it so hard that the air rifle actually broke in two.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So not only did George physically, mentally abuse his son, George also sexually abused his son. There was no reports of what actually happened, but it was reported that George sexually abused Robert. So the conditions of the house was also not great. They had a 2 to 3 bedroom house for the 12 children plus the parents. And let's say it was a 3 bedroom house with 12 children. That's what?
Parents and one, and then the 6 and 6?
Yeah, so that, yes, 6 kids in each room. So, sorry, I wrote that down, but I don't know why I didn't look at my notes. The mattresses, if the children had mattresses, they were very thin. No one cleaned the house either, so it was absolutely filthy. It had been about 12 months since Robert and his 3 siblings returned back home to the family home. And all of a sudden, George was like, I want Robert to leave. I don't want him anymore. He can go away. And it was like, okay. So Robert went into the foster system, and the other siblings had no idea that he went into the foster system because their dad told Robert, or their dad told them that Robert had died, and they had no reason not to believe him because they're younger.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, okay. And they grieved the death of their brother, and he was not dead.
Oh.
Robert is about 10 at this time, and there was no reports of how his life was until he was about the age of 16. At 16, Robert ran away from London, or ran away to London. Robert was like, I'm in control of my life. I'm going to turn my life around, make a purpose out of my life. But unfortunately, he was only 16. He had no money, no help, or anything like that. So he was living on the streets.
I thought you said he was 10.
So there was no reports of his life between the age of 10 to 16.
Got you. Okay. There's a gap. Got you.
Yeah, there's a gap.
Sorry.
So he's living on the streets. He was forced to pickpocket and stealing to stay alive. He ended up having a drug addiction, and to help fund it, he started sex work. At some point, he was raped by an acquaintance that was reported. He was in this awful, dangerous cycle of sex work, drug addiction, and homelessness. He wanted to so desperately to do better and be better, but he had zero support. And when he did have money, he felt the need to fund his addiction. It was taking a huge toll on his mental health. Robert ended up checking himself into a psychiatric hospital multiple times. During these visits, he would talk about the trauma he experienced, and something he reported during every single visit was he had these voices in his head, and these voices were telling him to kill his parents. And you know, it was the ninth. Why did I say? Oh, yeah. It was telling him to kill his parents. But each time he was released from the psychiatric hospital because they didn't find anything wrong with him. Without any treatment.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, granted, it was the 1970s, but, like, for real? So, in March of 1974, Robert is in his 20s, and he had lived in London for 4 years now. He met a man named John Farrell. John was 30 years old as a builder and lived in the area called Wood Green in London. John became a client of Robert's. He was actually a regular client, and so much so that people actually thought that they were in a relationship, but that was never confirmed by Robert. So a day in March of 1974, Robert met John at John's flat in Wood Green. Robert was high on drugs because he had an addiction. They started fooling around in bed, and all of a sudden, John jumps out of bed. He runs to the closet, and he comes back with a stack of photos, like Polaroids, and says, "Hey, what do you think of these photos?" And Robert was horrified because these photos were photos of... Take your time. Thank you. These photos were photos of young children being sexually abused by John himself.
Ew.
So, yeah. So, gross. And John, or Robert was like, "Nah, I am not about this." John showed him these photos, hoping Robert would be aroused by these photos as well, and even asked Robert if he could help recreate these scenes with John. Robert started having these flashbacks of what his father did to him, and Robert snapped. He jumped out of bed, found some sort of rope on the ground, and wrapped it around John's neck until John's face turned blue and died. But Robert was not done there. Robert was still high on drugs and listening to these voices in his head. So he found a knife and started stabbing John's body multiple times and then took a hammer to smash John's head in.
Wow.
Can you guess why I chose this story, Bree?
Yeah.
So,
Robert's pissed.
So, eventually Robert started to come to and sober up. He didn't feel remorse for what he did. He felt justified in what he did. He felt that he had saved several children from the further abuse John could cause. Even though he felt justified, Robert knew what he did was wrong. He knew he deserved punishment. So later that day,
he sounds like he's kind of, I mean, he's not within his right mind, but at the same time, like, he understands what he did was wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So later that day, Robert walked into a police station. He walked up to the front desk and said, "I have murdered somebody and I have to tell you about it." So the police questioned him for a couple hours and he told them everything. He was taken into custody to await trial. During the investigation, they learned Robert suffered from drug addiction, PTSD from the trauma his parents caused. He was a sex worker. He had been hospitalized multiple times in the psychiatric ward. So much going on in this man's past and in his current life. And after all of this findings, they said this man is not fit for trial. So instead, he was sent to a high security psychiatric hospital where I have no idea about this place, but it is the notorious Broadmoor Psychiatric Hospital, which is well known in Britain.
Okay.
And it was opened back in the 1800s. And the,
oh, it's haunted.
So I said it was opened back in the 1800s and it's world's first asylum, got the criminally insane, and it's still there today, or held the criminally insane. So I think that you should look into it.
It's haunted. It's for sure. I'm going to be. Yes. I need a juicy one.
I'm pretty sure it has stories to tell.
Yeah.
So, Robert was having a great time at the hospital in 1974, but he was enjoying himself. He was also getting the treatment that he needed, and he was even socializing. He made it very clear to everyone, though, that he hated child sex offenders. In the first 3 years that he was there, things were peaceful. You know, he just popped around, did his thing. And in 1977, Robert is 23 years old, and he met another patient named David Allen Francis. And around the same time, he made friends with David Cheeseman. So there's two Davids. So to keep things from being confusing, I'm going to use their last names. And I don't like using people's last names, but to keep things from being confusing, I'm going to. So Robert and Francis met, and Robert and Cheeseman became friends. Robert learned that Francis was actually a pedophile, which we know Robert despises child sex abusers. So Robert struck up a conversation with Cheeseman and was expressing he didn't like Francis because he was a pedophile and wanted to kill him. And Cheeseman was like, okay, let's do it. You know, right or die. I'm your bestie.
Like, you were in this real quick, man. No convincing.
Did you hear what I said? Yeah. So they make a plan of how to successfully play out this plan. The patients at the hospital were not allowed anything metal or anything that could be remotely turned into a weapon. But they were allowed plastic spoons for meals. So Robert hides a plastic spoon after a meal. He filed down the handle to the point, to like a super sharp point. In the morning of February 1977, the three men, amongst others, were outside playing a game of football around 11 a.m. And the game had ended. The three of them were all entering the building at the same time. And Robert asked one of the staff members if they could open up one of the changing rooms. Because like how I pictured it was like they're going inside and it's kind of like a locker room. But
yeah,
they have their own changing, like individual rooms to change into.
That makes like a stall.
Yeah. So the staff member opened up the changing room, and Robert Cheeseman forced Francis into the changing room and slammed it in the staff member's face. The policy was that no patient is to be in a changing room without a staff member. And not one, but three patients were in the changing room alone. And so they blocked the staff member from entering the door, and they like barricaded it with something. So Robert and Cheeseman leaped at Francis, and this attack became one of the most infamous incidents that have ever happened in the UK prison system. The next 9 hours, Robert and Cheeseman tortured Francis to death. First, Robert took out wire from a record player and bound Francis's hand and feet. Next, the two men took turns punching and kicking Francis over and over again, and then took his head, slamming it against the floor. Staff members could see what was happening through a tiny little window, probably no bigger than a 4x6 frame, but they couldn't get in because of how strong the barricade was. Next, the two men took out their makeshift knives and started stabbing Francis all over his body. The entire time during the attack, everyone outside the room could hear Francis begging the two men to stop. And at 8 p.m., the screams finally stopped. The two men lifted Francis into the air over their heads and then lowered it onto the ground. Robert calmly removed the barricade and walked out of the room. He was immediately remanded. The evidence showed not only was Francis's body beaten, but his head had been cracked open like a boiled egg.
Oh.
And pieces of his skull was on the ground.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
your face. And I really didn't know where to put this in the story, so I'm just going to put it here. But according to some of the staff, some of Francis's brain was missing, and some of the fragments of the brain was reportedly found on a spoon that was found. So Robert was dubbed the Brain Eater.
Oh, God.
But
Robert.
But all of those rumors were debunked later by forensics, but the media just loved that.
Yeah.
That name. So Robert committed his second murder, and during pretrial hearings, they determined Robert was now ready to stand trial. Even though his first, he was not getting help. This one, he was like in a psychiatric
hospital. Yeah, I know, exactly. Like, he's in a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, and they're like, he's stable enough now. So Robert and Cheeseman were found guilty of manslaughter without the possibility of parole, with a sentencing to be served in a normal prison. Robert was sent to Wakefield Prison, which is another pretty infamous prison in the UK, and is referred to the Monster Mansion because of the number of high number you're looking it up.
Yep.
Number of high number of murderers and sex offenders, including Dr. Death. In July 1978, Robert is 25 years old. He's been in the Wakefield for about a year. And Robert was still hearing voices in his head. And he was surrounded by sex offenders because this, I don't understand. This man says, I hate sex offenders. Like, don't put me next to a sex offender.
Yeah, I'm exactly. Going to kill like him. The two past people that he's killed have been mm-hmm. sex offenders. So don't and put him near them.
He's very open about how much he hates them. And they're like, we're going to put you right in the middle of all the sex offenders. So he's surrounded by these sex offenders. Robert decided to go on a killing spree. Killing sex offenders.
Oh, God.
He decided on the number 7 to kill. I don't know why he picked that number, but he was like, I'm going to kill 7 today.
It's a lucky number.
It's his lucky number. He created a weapon out of a plastic spoon. July 28, 1978, he attempted to lure sex offenders back into his cell to kill them, but other inmates did know his reputation and what he doesn't like. So most of them were like, nah, dog, I know what you're about.
How do they lure them in there? When you say it like that, I just imagine that he threw like a cookie out in the hall or like a dollar and like started pulling it with string. And they're like, ooh, a cookie. Gotcha, shiv.
So Robert found this man named Sione Dogwood, who agreed to go back to Robert's cell. The two knew each other. Sione was on the sex offender list, but he was on the sex offender list, but that's not why he was in jail this time. He was in jail for murdering his wife. And a lot of the articles said that, like, oh, he wasn't in jail for, you know, a sex crime. And it's like, well, he's still on the list.
He's still a pedophile.
Yeah. So he lures him back to his cell. As soon as they were back at Robert's cell, Solani was immediately attacked by Robert. He stabbed him multiple times all over his body, and at one point Robert took out a piece of string and wrapped it around his neck and held it tight for several minutes while he simultaneously smashed his head into the floor.
Oh gosh.
Once Solani was dead, he stashed the body under the bed, cleaned himself off in the sink, and went back out to look for his next victim. So it's been an hour. Robert passes William Roberts' cell, and William was laying down face down with his head, like face down on his pillow in his bed. And he was sleeping. So Robert walks into William's cell and starts stabbing him repeatedly into the arm, chest, neck until he was dead. Then Robert drug his body out of the bed and repeatedly smashed William's head against the wall so hard that plaster was falling off the wall. Even though Robert's goal was 7, he felt satisfied with the 2 that he killed, so he walked up to the prison guard's office, set down his spoon knife thing, and said, It looks like you'll have two less during roll call tonight.
Oh, gosh.
During the trials for the last two murders, he showed no remorse and even stated he was picturing his parents during the killings. He even said, if I had killed my parents instead of these men, I would be walking free man. Probably not, but yeah, I get your point, bud. Following these two murders, he was convicted of two additional murders and received two more life sentences in prison instead of the psychiatric ward. So he's up to six killings now. During these two murders, But during the sentencing, it was decided that Robert was too dangerous to serve his multiple life sentences in general population. So they decided to sentence him to solitary confinement. He was held in a general solitary confinement cell. And in 1982, a news crew visited Wakefield Prison. They did a footage of Robert describing his crimes, and the public was like outraged. They thought that Robert should be punished more, and solitary confinement wasn't enough. So Wakefield Prison built Robert his own solitary confinement cell in 1983. It was built on solid plastic, like plexiglass. It was 5.5 meters by 4.5 meters. It was a tad bit bigger than an average cell, but it was out of plexiglass so he could be monitored 24/7. His bed frame was made out of concrete with a tiny thin mattress for a bed. The only other furniture was a table and chair made out of strong cardboard, and the toilet sink combo was bolted to the ground. Apparently, the movie Hannibal Lecter, the cell that he was prisoned in, is supposed to be a replica of Robert's actual prison cell.
Interesting. But okay.
It's never been confirmed or denied by the filmmakers.
Okay.
So Robert is only allowed outside of his cell only 1 hour a day to the yard, but no other prisoners are allowed to be outside at the same time as him. And no matter where Robert would go, he had six prison guards escorting him wherever he went. To go to Robert's cell, you had to enter and exit 17 different prison cells. Because of the isolation, Robert's skin was paper white because of the lack of vitamin D. He was hardly allowed showers. His hair was incredibly unmanageable because of the lack of self-care. His speech had also taken a huge toll. This is from the lack of human interaction because the prison guards wouldn't even talk to him. If you listen to the interviews, he now has a speech impediment. He discusses that during an interview he has, blaming lack of human interaction because of this.
Yeah.
During the last few decades, Robert was moved to two different treatment hospitals undergoing different treatments, but only lasted a few at each hospital, or a few weeks at each hospital, and was kept in solitary confinement at each hospital. In the year 2000, Robert had been in solitary confinement for 20 years. He wrote a letter asking if his conditions for solitary confinement could be relaxed and be introduced to general population, which was denied. He also asked for a pet budgie, which I didn't know what that was, so I had to Google it. It is a parakeet. He was also denied. That was also denied. And even in the request, he's like, I won't eat it, I promise. Like, he's like, I just want interaction.
Yeah.
So
just
Robert,
need a friend.
Mm-hmm. Robert made an appeal to the public asking if he could kill himself by taking a pill, because he was like, I'm not going to be released and nobody wants to have me in the general population, so can I just kill myself? And that was denied also. To this day, Robert is still in solitary confinement in a glass cage. He was eventually given a TV and a PS2. I watched a documentary, and he has siblings that learned that he was not dead, and they have reconnected with him, and he has nephews that have learned about him. One nephew was even named after him and will visit him often. Aww. The two will share interests in classical music and much more. So Robert is currently 70 years old and has been in prison for 49 years, making him the longest serving prisoner in the UK, and has been in solitary confinement for 45 years.
Wow.
And that is Robert Maudsley, the sex offender killer.
That was a good one.
Thank
you. That was very, wow, I cannot believe, I mean, it's not, I don't think here we would allow, I think we've laxed a lot on solitary confinement because people talk about how awful it is.
Yeah.
And like, I get it, like, you shouldn't kill people, but at the same time, like, he had a really fucked up past, and like,
he was
highly, why are those parents not in jail? They should be in prison. Like, locking your child in the room for 6 months and beating them every day, that is so, that's disgusting. That's sick. That's, how could you do that to a person?
I have no idea.
He's just, all he's doing is, you know, again, he shouldn't do it. You shouldn't kill people. But, you know.
I mean, at least
put was him he in really, like, yeah, they could have put him in a different area. Don't put him right next to sex offenders.
He said he didn't like him.
Don't put him in freaking solitary confinement. That's not for that long. That's so sad.
45 years.
Poor man.
I know.
Okay, he did wrong, guys. Again, I know. I'm being, but you know what? It's okay. I can be sympathetic. Whatever.
Have human decency, though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm very.
Unless you're a sex offender, then you deserve solitary confinement. Actually, yeah. No. You know what? No, you don't, because guess what? I want people to hurt you, so yep. I'll sick Robert on you.
There you go. Robert's just doing his job.
He's just like,
oh. Oh, man. That was a good one, dude.
Thank you.
I'm glad you did that.
I cannot wait to hear the story.
Oh. Okay, well, let me tell you something about my story. I started it when we were on episode 48, I think.
Episode 48?
Yep, and I hung it up because I was like, I don't want to do this. I'm not into it. And then I was like, it's time. So,
ooh.
It is one from the book. It is the USS Arizona in Hawaii, Pearl Harbor.
No way.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm so excited. My parents have been to that.
I want to go to it. It seems, a lot of the reviews seems like it's really cool, and it's definitely worth going to.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I thought I saw a gnat in here. Okay, so, as always, let's start with the history. The USS Arizona was a battleship built for the U.S. Navy and was commissioned in 1916. It was named in honor of the 48th state. She was the second and last ship in the Pennsylvania class, which is like the sizes of them.
Oh, okay.
So the Pennsylvania class was significantly bigger than others. The Arizona was 608 feet long, and her crew number was 56 officers and 1,031 enlisted men. Lots of people on the ship. Yeah. The Arizona was armed with 12 45 caliber 14-inch guns in triple gun turrets, and defense against torpedo boats was provided by 22 51 caliber 5-inch guns mounted in individual casemates in the sides of the ship's hull.
Okay.
Lots of firepower there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's ready for war.
Lastly,
the Arizona mounted 450 caliber 3-inch guns for anti-aircraft defense. So again, the ship was highly, you know, ready for war, and you know, she was a beast.
Sounds like it. Why do they call it a girl?
Because they're all girls.
Because girls are better than boys.
Oh, I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay.
So the ship escorted Woodrow Wilson to Paris, to a Paris peace conference, and would represent America in some other deployments. So it kind of did a little show. I don't know, maybe to show everybody their guns. In 1921, show everybody, hey, don't mess with me. And wow, other people in other countries are listening to this and they're like, wow, what douches. No, I'm just saying,
guys.
It's
very American of you guys.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. So in 1921, she was transferred to the Pacific Fleet, where she would remain for the rest of her career, but still participated in regular deployment exercises, training, and just doing her service for America. Lots of nothing super serious that it was in at that time, just kind of, you know, went back and forth and took crew members back and forth to do deployments and stuff. Yeah. In April of 1940, the Pacific Fleet's home port was moved from California to Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, as a deterrent to Japanese imperialism. So again, to show them their guns.
Show off our guns.
Don't mess with us. On December 7th, on December 7th of 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, and the Arizona was hit by several airdropped armor-piercing bombs. One detonated an explosive-filled magazine, sinking the battleship and killing over 1,700 of its officers and crew. The now sunken vessel is now an underwater tomb for the crew lost. The bodies recovered were taken to a nearby cemetery, but a remainder of 900 men were declared buried at sea. So...
Jeez.
It's so sad. I forgot about all this. It's such a sad story.
It is a very sad story.
It's a big loss. And like whenever it happened, they didn't think, because right whenever the Japanese came, they thought it was going to be, it was around the same time, I think, whenever their planes were supposed to be coming in. So they thought it was them, but it ended up being them. And then they started bombing and it was a complete surprise. And then like the second wave hit that gun that was already like explosive filled on the ship, which
right
kaboom.
So they used their own weapons against them.
Exactly. Ugh. So it was firepower ready, and so how, one question that I had with this was, how and are there still bodies down there? I just wanted to point this out. Yes. There are still bodies down there.
What?
According to a mortician, many of the bodies, because 900 were never found. They were on the ship and the ship sank. And it's not very deep, like you can see it. So according to a mortician, many of the bodies remained there because of the intense fires that burned for days, which got so hot that they twisted the metals on the ship and made the ship inaccessible. So like anything that was in there got stuck in there. So at the time of the attack, identification or retrieval of bodies was pretty much impossible. Only 107 people were positively identified, leaving 1,070 people to fall in different categories, such as bodies that were never found, bodies that were just removed from the ship, bodies that were burned and were buried in temporary mass graves, declared as unknowns, and reburied at a national cemetery. Some remains couldn't even be recovered because they were in the rear portion of the ship. And when it was determined that the USS Arizona could not be salvaged, the Navy decided that it would be too difficult to remove the dead in a respectful manner. They just left them down there as kind of like a respectful thing. And so that has been their resting place since.
Oh my gosh.
So sad. And so sad.
That's
for the families,
so sad.
Too. And like a lot of them were like so burned they couldn't even like figure out who was who. So like
that's devastating.
Yeah. Okay, so the visitors and staff have reported footsteps, hushed voices. This is like at the memorial itself. Whispers, sounds of distant explosions, which is pretty crazy.
I don't like that.
And the loss of this was so big that even some of the surrounding areas are believed to be haunted. There have been reports all over Ford Island of strange events, of sounds, presence, just random presences. Residents have reported footsteps and voices in their homes. They claim items in their homes move and go missing. They have issues with electricity. They even have claimed to see dark shadows in the home.
Ew, no, Bri, I don't like that. Not cool.
They're probably nice.
That sounds very evil.
Is at the airstrip that is around there. Visitors have reported the feeling of like being in a panic and seeing a strange glowing mist that floats up and down the runway, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess.
There is also a pretty harmless, it sounds pretty harmless, something or someone who likes to switch on lights, turn on faucets, wings heavy doors, and this is also accompanied by the sound of jingling keys and loud footsteps. And sounds many like claim
a dude.
It like a janitor or like a maintenance guy. Yeah, yeah, I know. I thought so too. I think it sounds like a maintenance guy. But like anytime like people are like, what was that? The security guards are like, that's just Charlie.
Charlie? What are you worried about?
In 2011, an Australian family visiting captured a chilling image beneath the waters above the USS Arizona that went viral. Susan DeVanney and her family noticed something looking up, and it looked like a young face, like a young sad face, like shimmering in the oily water above the ship's resting place. And I really want to show you because it's like kind of eerie. It's very eerie. Do you see it? Okay. Do you see the face?
Yeah, I see the face.
This looks
creepy.
I know. It could be coincidence, but also, you know, it looks pretty eerie. So
it does. It's very eerie.
Yeah. Chilling. Also, the famous ghost hunters investigated the area back in 2011. The team obtained a lot of evidence from the airplane hangars, especially, which still bores the scars and bullet holes from that day. They reported voices, music, seeing or hearing movement around the artifacts, objects being moved overnight, equipment malfunctions, visual apparitions, and interactions with something. Obviously, it was not a human. So, wow.
Music is interesting.
Yeah, I know. Where did that come from? Maybe it's like the 1940s. Did I say 40? Shit.
I don't remember.
I am awful. Yeah, 1940s. It's like 1940s music.
Ooh.
Let's do the Charleston. I say let's do the Charleston for any time era that was before like 1960. I just associate that dance with any older generation. Anyway, sorry for those who are listening. Anyway, so I got a couple Yelp reviews. They're not super scary, but I don't know. You'll see. Yeah. So the first one is from Butterfly Lady 68, and he gave 5 stars. Oh, wait, it says lady. And they said, I heard rumors that some of the ghosts may follow you home, so make sure you thank the soldiers below for their service to our country. Give them the honor they rightfully deserve, and they will stay at peace. So that wasn't really anything. Yeah, it wasn't like a haunted experience, but I wanted to put it in there because that's pretty cool. Like, thank them for their service.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, thank them. Yeah.
This one is from I Wish I Was in Texas with 5 stars. It says, okay. I don't believe in ghosts, but you can feel the spirits of from December 1941 here. That's all.
Wow.
This next one is from a Camonang, and they gave 5 stars, and they said, the thing that haunted me the most is seeing the oil still floating in the water and the overwhelming smell of diesel fuel almost 70 years later. Amazing. Again, not a really haunted review, but like still like, holy crap, that's pretty crazy that the oil is still coming out. And again, another chilling thing about this place.
Yeah.
as of today, the ship remains underwater, memorialized by a long white structure you can go into and visit and see the ship at the bottom. For those who have survived, many have chosen to have their ashes spread with the ship. So, like, the veterans that are still alive, some of them have their ashes spread with the ship after they die. One of the last survivors, I don't know if he's the very last survivor. When the news headline came out, it said he was the last one. But then when I looked further into it, it didn't look like he was the last one. Huh. But one of the last survivors, Lou Conter of Pearl Harbor, just died right before I had decided to redo the story. And I was like, huh, that's why I started doing the story, because that news article popped up and I was like, oh, I should go look into Pearl Harbor. And I'm like, oh, wait, I already started Pearl Harbor. So he had just died at 102. He was 20 at the time of the attack and was stationed at the back decks of the ship. Very lucky to be alive, I'm sure.
Oh, that was stories and trauma he has. Right. Survivor's guilt.
Right. Ugh. That was the USS Arizona Pearl Harbor.
That was good. Thank you.
Check out the book. You're welcome, buddy.
I like that one. Your face.
Sorry.
Okay.
Are we going to stop recording and re-record for all these? Oh, yeah. I guess we would have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is my neighborhood story. It's from next door. It says, today I saw a coyote, a helicopter, an unhoused man, a police car. These were all at different times and places throughout the day. Does anyone know what's going on? Sounds like you're just seeing things, bud.
Yeah, what? You're alive? You live in a world where other people exist and other things exist?
And a place where you might see a coyote. I don't
know. Is it the Roadrunner? Looney Tunes are back in action?
Oh my gosh. Okay, guys, we're gonna get, like we said, we have a couple other episodes that we are recording, so we are going to go do those. Have you checked in on the neighbors?
What's with the neighbors?
Breen,
Amy. Out.
You're always so delayed. It's you. It's not me. It's you.
Sorry, it's me. It's all my fault. I'm so sorry. It's such a failure.
Say hi to your cats for us.
And a shout out to Callie, or Callie the Beautiful, as her stage name goes.
Don't get dead.
Okay.